Good evening. Welcome, welcome. Hello to all. So if this is past your bedtime, keep your eyes awake. If it's just kind of getting into your, you know, like you're just about to thrive. We're going all the way through midnight, not in this one session, though. That's all right. But we're doing motivating, guiding, and coaching your life Bible study. That's what this session is. Mr. Ken Brumley will be leading us through this session this evening. So if that's what you're expecting, you're in the right room. If not, you can reference your notes and head to the right room. Anyways, as long as everybody got notes in the back and signed in when you came in, we will get started. So I'd like to introduce Mr. Ken Brumley.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Got our little recorder on here. Hey, folks.
Hello.
I'll tell you, I'm still thinking about that session we just came out of, that general session. Man, that was wonderful. From Champion Forest? Wow. And that was so nice. I've got so many things I'm taking away from that. I'm glad you're here. I am Ken Brumley, and I have been at a wonderful church called Green Acres, the Baptist Church, and you can hum that if you want to. But Green Acres Baptist Church for 35 years, and I've worked in all different leadership areas of the church. I came there and worked in singles ministry, and then I was doing leadership training and things like this while I was building a counseling ministry for the church. I've been doing that for 18 years. A counseling ministry called Grace Works. Because when it comes to healing, grace does work in all of it. I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad that I have a chance to meet you in the position that you are and the place of faith that you're in at this point in your life. And I'm glad to see the young hearts and the more mature hearts here and the hearts in between. So we're going to cover a lot of ground. I've got enough material for 2 hours, and we're going to do it in about 50 minutes as we move through here. So you're going to be able to... Has everybody got a handout? Everybody got a handout from the back? Okay, Amy, there's some folks here. This will make a whole lot more sense to you. When Don asked me to come and to talk about motivating and guiding and coaching your class, I told him, I said, you know, those are three different subjects. And you could teach for an hour on each one of these. And he said, I know, but do the best you can. So I'm going to do the very best that I can as we're moving through here. When it comes to your LBS, whether you call it a Sunday morning Bible study group, an LBS, or just good old Sunday school, like they used to call it, where Jesus went to Sunday school. He didn't go to LBS as he was saying. Just saying. No. I'm not old school or anything, I'm just saying he did. It's in the Bible somewhere. But when it comes to this, the first thing that he asked me to do is, I want you to speak on motivating leaders. And I said, well, that's sort of an oxymoron in itself, the concept of if you're a leader and having to be motivated, you probably shouldn't be a leader at that point. But we all need these points in our life that says, okay, let's nail it down again. Let's talk one more time about who I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to do and what kind of attitude do I lead with and what are my eyes. Let's get our eyes maybe adjusted as we go through here. I love the three things because those three things of gathering, growing, and giving, those are your destinations. And everything that you should be doing in your LBS has to do with one of those three areas. Any volunteer, any leader that you're building, you're going to focus them upon one of those three areas. And it's so important that they know and they have a complete, clear understanding of where they're going and why they're going in that direction. And those three words are beautiful and they're powerful. Thank you so much. I have a sinus thing where it all drains in your throat at the end of the day, and it kind of sounds like I'm struggling with puberty, but I've been there. When it comes to this clear destination, I love reading the book of Alice in Wonderland and then seeing the movie, because there's this one portion of the movie where Alice is walking down this road together with her dog, and they come to the rabbit. And the rabbit is sitting right at a fork in the road. Some of you remember this. He's sitting right at that fork in the road. And Alice gets up there and she looks down one way, then she looks down the other way, and she asks the rabbit which way she, you know, which road she should take. And the rabbit looks at both of those roads and then looks back at her and said, "Where are you going?" She said, "I don't know." He said, "Then either road will do." And I think about that when I think about the fact that there are some people who may not, it may not be very clear in their mind where you're leading them. And that's why these three words have to be a part of your conversation, and much more than just the announcement, but they're a part of your heart. It is a part of a deeper vision that you have. Number B there on that first page is that you've got to have clear transportation. How are you going to get to this area to where you're bringing about change not only in their life, but in the lives of people that are in your church and the lives of people that are in their neighborhoods? When it comes to this that aspect of transportation, I simply wrote there, and you've got it on your notes there, that the leader must provide ministry entry levels. Just as there are many accesses to the gospel, there should also be just as many levels of involvement or commitment. There needs to be a variety of spiritual gifts in your LBS. So let me just share something with you real quick. At Green Acres, I had been there for about 4 or 5 years, and they hired a new staff member to come in, and one of his responsibilities was benevolence. And guess what he had? He had the gift of mercy. We ran out of money in the first week. Benevolence money, because he was giving money left and right. And then you know what the church did? The church took that responsibility away from him and gave it to our executive pastor, who had a type A personality. And it was by the books. It was by the business. If they weren't bleeding, they didn't need money. If they didn't have tire marks or wrench marks on their hands, they wasn't getting any kind of car assurance at all. So what am I simply saying here? I'm simply saying that you need to know what the spiritual gifts of your LBS, what they are. Who has what? Now, if you haven't done that, then encourage them to go online. You don't want to spend a whole morning filling it out. Give them the website to it. And there's about 3 different websites, and one of them is real long and extensive. Don't give them that one. There's one just right there in the middle, and they can take it in about 20 minutes. Now, why is that so important when you begin to look for leaders? It's not a trick question. It's just a dumb question.
You need the right people for the right positions.
Absolutely. Because what you're doing now is that you're joining God. You're joining God in how He has gifted them to be there at that point. Because I would dare say that half of your group doesn't know what their spiritual gift is. Would you agree or disagree?
I agree.
Okay. Because that is vitally important that they are believers in this class. And your responsibility is not only to set this atmosphere, but it is also to encourage those folks among you to begin to take that risk to grow and to take on more responsibility at whatever point that they are in, and to grow them as leaders. And so you've got to know how God has gifted them in order to be able to put them. Now, if you have all people who have nothing but administrative gifts in your Sunday school class, that's going to be a terrible class. That's going to be a terrible class. Just go in there and read the lesson and walk out of there, because you can't tell them anything at that point. Please don't. Leaders provide entry levels, that second dot said, according to responsibility and risk. Now I want you to circle the word risk. Now, why would I say that there are different levels and entry levels, and all of them have a different risk to them? We don't think about risk. But you as the leader, as the director of that group, you're getting ready to ask people to do something that they don't know if they're gifted to do or that they're capable of doing. They'll tell you no, and they don't even know what you're asking them to do. Why would I say risk? in an LBS, that you're moving them toward a greater risk.
You want growth.
You want growth. Does that take risk?
Yeah, it does.
What's the risk of? Change?
Yeah.
Oh, Judy.
And admitting your...
Oh, Judy, shut up. Stop that. Asking me to change. What do you think, Rob?
Stepping up to doing something you've never done before. That's scary. I did that. I'm doing it. But you grow into it.
Absolutely. One of the things that we fail to do sometimes as leaders in our LBSs is that class, that LBS, becomes the world in itself. And then even though we can talk about outreach, it's still just something ethereal in their mind that we need to invite, but it's still, the focus is still upon that class. And the ultimate purpose of your LBS is to impact the world. Not necessarily just to bring change and risk and a growth of faith in there, but it is to bring them to a place to where they stop looking at their shoes and they start looking at the horizon. What is the ultimate reason that we are here on a Sunday morning?
What are you there for?
It's about world changing. Now you tell that to your Sunday school. Excuse me. Your LBS on Sunday morning, and they will look at you like a calf looking at a new gate. They will have no idea what you're talking about. Some of you who have been involved in missions, you catch a little bit of that. How God grew you in, as a junior in a Sunday school class in a little bitty church, and God began to develop your heart, and He began to speak to your heart, and those very things there are the things that you find yourself connecting to on a mission field somewhere, on a trip or an expanded trip. And then you begin to catch a little whiff of what that's truly all about. Acts 1:9, Luke is writing and he says, "But you will receive power. And when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses," he's quoting Jesus is saying, "in Jerusalem and in all of Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth." If your Sunday school class was Jerusalem, that's your home. That's your safe place. Do you have the ability to love them and to speak to them in such a way that gets their eyes off of their shoes and begin to look up above? What difference does this make beyond personal growth? Do you have access? Because this church has tons of accesses to be able to move not only just in your LBS, but to another level of leadership in this church, and that leadership to another level, and to another level. There's so many different entry points of leadership in this church. It is unbelievable. Second thing that we're going to talk about is motivating people at different points on their journey. Now, I realized in directing a ministry, whether it was married adults or whether it was single adults, that I felt like I was a cheerleader sometimes. Getting up there and saying, "Come on, y'all. Now we've got all these leadership positions. We need these. Y'all can do this. You can do this. 2, 4, 6, 8. We can pull this off. You just got to be able to get in there and to do this." Now, who wants to do that? People are looking around like, "You're not even speaking the same language." They are at that point. One of the most powerful things is when I began to realize who these people were in that Sunday morning Bible study, who these leaders were that I was directing on another level. And I want you to read there with me. You've got to understand who these people are that are sitting before you. Is that everyone is struggling with some issue in their life. Everyone in your LBS is struggling with some issue in their life. It could be a relationship. It could be about finances. It could be about their history. At a point of guilt or shame. It could be about their children at any one point. It could be about their marriage at that point. It could be about anything. But is there anybody in this room right here not struggling with some issue that's around them? Now, why is that so important to know that?
You're not alone.
Why do you think?
You're the only one.
Absolutely.
You can relate to others now.
I can relate to your struggle, Chris, more than I can relate to your successes.
May I say something?
You bet.
I can testify to that fact because my wife had a knee replacement, but beyond that, I drive her to PT because she doesn't want to drive, no confidence for a while, okay? But I have seen patients come in for physical therapy at David Davidson's place. He's a member here. And everybody has a load. I don't mean to brag, so don't take it that way, please. I have physically prayed with 3 patients that have come in.
Sure.
That have had family problems, financial problems. I've got problems. It's hard to share them sometimes. But when you're down and out and you've had knee surgery, a broken wrist or something, and we're all equal, we've got a limb that's been restored, and you've got to work it to get it back. Black, brown, green, or blue, we have a common bond.
Absolutely. You know, my administrative assistant, who she really does all the work, as most of you who have administrative assistants know, but she's had a double mastectomy. And she meets with women who are getting ready to or have already had this. She leads a group of women who've gone through this. And there is nothing more powerful. She's asked me to come and speak to these ladies before, and I'm saying, you know, I'm a counselor, but I can't identify with their pain. I can't identify with their pain. And she looked me right in the eye and she said, if you felt any kind of pain, if you felt any kind of struggle at all, they're not going to identify with you as a man. They're going to identify with your pain. They're going to identify with your lostness. They're going to identify with your struggle with a new identity. And that changed my whole understanding of sometimes these people who come into our class. Everybody is struggling with something. Number 2 there, everybody is afraid of something. Everyone in your LBS has a fear in their lot. Now, those fears come from a lot of places. It's not just about temperament, and it's not just about personality. It's from their family culture. It's from experiences that are in their life. And I'll tell you, I would love for you to have an LBS some morning and tell everybody ahead of time. Email them and say, you know what, Lord, we're going to talk about powerful experiences that took place in our life. Moments where God showed up in our life. Or we're going to talk about moments where we couldn't find God if he was standing right there in front. Now let me tell you what. That's going to be a Sunday morning Bible study or a Sunday morning gathering that's going to sound just like Jesus with his disciples. Because you remember when his disciples came to Jesus and said, Jesus, man, these stories are incredible. Why are you telling these stories? I mean, you tell these parables and we all are shaking our heads like we know what you're talking about. We ain't got a clue what you're talking about. And Jesus looked at him and said, you know, this is as Isaiah would say, he said that the word of God came and it came to him this way because those who had ears couldn't hear and those who had eyes could not see. Because that's what who you're dealing with on Sunday morning, that in some area of their life they cannot see God. They cannot hear his voice in their life. And you've got to be able to embrace that at that point of fear. Number 3 there, everyone has a different definition of what it means to be a leader. So don't stand before your LBS and say, we need some leaders. We need some leaders. So just volunteer. Come, bow your head. Somebody raise your hand. You know why nobody's looking if you're going to be a leader in this. I'm telling you, everybody has a different definition of what it means to be a leader. And as I shared in the beginning, one of the most important things that you will do as a leader of that department or a leader of your LBS is not only with those different entry points of low risk and high risk, but you're going to stand before them and allow them to understand that this is what it means to be a leader at this level right here along this line. This is what it's going to mean. And I'm not asking you to be like Fred or Joe or Wilma or Sarah. I'm asking you to be you at this point in their life. Now, when you stop and think about the men that Jesus chose, as his disciples? There's no country in the world, there's no company in the world that would be able to function with those kind of people. From Matthew, who was probably the smartest of all of them, through Luke, maybe as a doctor, and the rest of them were either farmers, peasants, fishermen. They didn't have anything in common except that single vision that Jesus had, and that was to change the world. Now, that fourth dot there simply says that every spiritual gift expresses itself in different leadership, in a different leadership style. Every spiritual gift expresses itself in a different leadership style. So, boys and girls, I want you to know that if you realize that somebody has a certain kind of spiritual gift, they still don't know what you're talking about when it comes to being a leader. And you have to be able to give them that freedom to be able to risk on their own. And you're going to guide them, but you're not necessarily going to tell them what to do, because their gift's going to dictate how they do that leadership position. Now, you're thinking, this is pretty risky here because we've got some pretty strange and crazy people in our class. Man, I'm telling you what, there's nothing more powerful than you to believe or have somebody believe in you. Would you agree? I love the fact that when there's a great theologian by the name of Leonard Ravenhill, and some of you may have acquainted with Leonard Ravenhill, but he was a great theologian. He lived up in the East Texas area. After he came from Austria, and he was leading a Bible study group through the Swiss Alps, and they were going from village to village, and they would get out of their bus, and then they would walk into the village, and he would tell them different things about that village. And you know, you always have one group. I don't know how many of you have been to Israel. People have been in here, been to Israel? Anybody? One, two, a few of you? It's inevitable that when you go to Israel or you go to some country where somebody's been before, they're going to tell you everything about that, whether you want to know it or not. And the people who usually go on the Israel trips that have been there before, they know more about Israel than Jesus does. And they're going to tell you about that. But as Lynn Ravenhill got off the bus and began to lead his people, he had one of those men that was in his group that was a little bit obnoxious. And of course, he stopped and looked, like we've got in every group and every mission team, you got somebody who's going to stop and everybody's going to walk off. And he stopped and he looked at this old man sitting on the side of the road. And Dr. Ravenhill said that, you know, as he paused and listened to the conversation, that the man in his group asked the old man sitting on the side of the road, he said, were there any famous men that were born in this village? And he looked at the old man sitting there, and the old man looked up, and Dr. Ravenhill said that the guy looked at him and said, no, only babies. So why would I tell you that story? What's so important about that story in leadership? No wrong answers, I promise you.
They had to develop.
You got to develop. Which just takes what?
Time.
Patience. They're children. And those of you who have children, you know you can love and kiss them, and yet there's this part of you that just wants to grab the back of their neck and squeeze. My mother had this way of pinching my leg and twisting. That would make anybody believe in God. In your LBS, you have got to know those people sitting before you, is that everyone is influenced or being influenced by others. Everyone is influencing or being influenced by someone else. Everyone in your group on a Sunday morning or Sunday night, they are a leader in some area of their life and they are a follower in some area of their life. And I don't care if they work at a they don't have 7-Elevens anymore, I don't know what they call them. I don't care if they just, it's a menial hourly job inside. They are leading in some area of their life and someone's following them. And they are following somebody else. Now, I don't care where you are in the financial arrangements of this world and how much money that you make, but even from the very top all the way down to the lowest paid employee, that's exactly what's taking place in some area of their life they're leading and some area of their life that they are following. Sociologists tell us that even in the most introverted person in this world is going to impact at least 10,000 people in his lifetime.
What does that mean?
That means the fact that on a, it's sort of like the old saying, Judy, that one compliment has the ability to impact 200 people in one day. By me giving a compliment to you, I love your hair and your glasses are absolutely perfect. You did good getting dressed tonight. I didn't mean to embarrass you, but you did.
I'm unembarrassed.
You did. I'm not laughing. But the impact of that in your life would potentially, you may be sitting beside Joseph and you'd want to give him a compliment, and it's going to continue to pass on and on and on. I remember the story of someone in Dallas, and his entire job, he was an older man, but he stood on a busy street corner and all he did was wave at people. Every day he sat there and waved at people and just called out, you know, called out different people's names. They'd roll down their windows and he'd say, "Who are you?" And they would tell him his name. And the next day they came by that same way, he would call their name out. And when he died, his funeral was packed. And the testimonies that came from that was the fact that somebody knew their name.
Wow.
Somebody saw them. Now, there's nothing more powerful in your life than your name.
That's true.
Your name. Now, for those of you who are leaders, knowing and memorizing names is it probably one of the most important things that you'll do. And don't look at me and say, I don't remember people's names. Well, you remember your name. You remember the name of fruits. I don't care. There's 100 different ways that you memorize people's names and think about them. But I'm telling you, if you'll look them in the eye and while you're talking to them, if you'll say, "Judy, you know, Judy, you know, this is what happened the other day, and Judy, you'll never believe that this is how I respond to that. And I'm telling you what, Judy, I'm so glad that you're here to talk with me about that." By the time I've walked away from Judy, I'll never forget her name. The same thing with any of you. But let me tell you what, when you call out somebody's name that's in that class that they don't think that you know who they are, man, X-ray, I mean, they're beaming in on you at that point. At the very bottom of the page, every person must be motivated to be before you motivate them to do. Who of you here have been in the military? We have no idea.
I grew up in the military, family.
You grew up in the military? Okay.
My dad.
I didn't see your name.
And come here. I want to give you this. That'll help you close.
Oh. I love you already. Lucy.
There
used to be a great song about that, you remember? "Hello, I love you, won't you tell me your name?" Now, if I put this in my mouth and choke on it, Lucy, I'm more choking up. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much. I have no idea. In military, there's something that's very common that they do to everybody who enlists and comes through in boot camp. They take away their identity.
Yep.
They strip it. They strip it down completely. Why do they do that?
They can build you back up.
You can build you back up. They'll have you thinking about team more than anything else. Now, I want you to know that the concept of... I got spit on. I'm just drooling. I love that, Lucy. One of my granddaughters is named Lucy. Let me tell you what takes place. Say and do. Feelings. You can make your own. Thinking. And down here at the very bottom is core values. You can put beliefs if you want to. Now in counseling, when people come into my office and they want us to talk, and I've never met them before, guess what they want to talk about? They want to talk about what they're doing and saying up here at the top. They want to talk about their feelings, and they want to know how I can help them change their feelings. Or I can change some bad habit that they're doing up here in the top. And I have to look at every one of these dear people and say, I can't help you. And they'll say, well, then this is what I'm thinking. I need you to help me with my thinking. Maybe help me change my thoughts. I said, I can't help you change your thoughts. Now, if you want to work on your core values, then I can help you. Because what you value, what you deem to be most valuable in your life, whether it has to do with truth, whether it has to do with other people, whether it has to do with your relationship with God or how you see yourself to be, that determines what you think. And what you think determines what you feel. And what you feel determines what you're going to do and say. You will never do anything and say anything that there wasn't something in your core values that told you it was okay to do that. If I could tell you how many men, how many women I've talked to who are going through divorce, who there's an affair that's involved, I hear this from time to time. Well, you know, it just happened. And I always love that statement. Well, we were just friends, and you know, just one thing led to another. If I could figure out what that one thing was in the beginning, you know what they're telling me? They're trying to tell me that up here at the top, they did something at the tip, it wasn't connected to the core beliefs. Do you understand what conversion means when you're converted to Christianity? Conversion isn't about what changing what you say and do or what you feel, even what you think. Conversion happens right here. That you give your values, your core values to God, and He converts them. He transforms them. He turns them upside down, and your values are converted His way, His thinking, His heart. And so in every one of your LBS members, they are there, and some part of their life is in the process of being converted. Paul will talk about the fact that he was saved. He is saved at this very time. He's being saved at this time. And he knows that God's going to continue to save him in the future. So salvation is not this thing where you walk down the aisle. It is this process where we begin to allow God to convert all of these core, deep values and belief in our heart. Does that make sense? So your members are in the process at some area in their life of being converted. And when that takes place, guess what happens to your identity?
Changes.
Say it with me. What? It changes. I'm telling you, I've spent a lifetime trying to change what I think and what I feel. It doesn't work. Until I'm willing to sit down with God and His Word and allow that Word to change my heart. Number three, understanding the power and position of a leader. I thought it was very important that we talk about this. Even though you may know this inside and out, but I would want you to be able to outline your walk with Christ through these three words. One is that the power of a leader is dependent upon one thing, and that is trust. Trust is so powerful that it can lead people to die. We've had friends, we've had people who have died in the military, Afghanistan or Iraq. It's different from Vietnam, you know, because they believed in something that was bigger than them. World War II was about a whole generation of people who believed in something that was greater than themselves. And so that's why I put that down, that the power of a leader is dependent upon how willing your people are to trust and how you trust God. Now, is your trust, JJ, something that is it a work of progress that's going on? Or are you at the limit? You filled up. You already trust God completely with everything. I'm still in the process. Anybody got complete faith in here? That you completely trust God with every part of your life? I don't. You know why? Because I worry about things. Joseph, you tell me what you worry about, and I'll tell you where God's not present. You believe that to be true? You know what we worry about? Can I, not can he, Where worry is present, faith is absent. Worry and faith have sort of this inverted relationship. When one's present, the other's absent. Always. Now, why am I telling you that? Because your faith is a work of process in progress. Your trust in God is a work in progress. And do you know what people want to hear? Do you think they want to hear where this plateau that you've reached at a point of trust? Or do they want to hear your struggle and your journey to that position?
Can I say something?
Yes, sir, Joe.
The thing with trusting God is that as human beings, what we'll do, like one of the scriptures says, like 1 Peter 5 and 7, it says, cast all your care upon Him because He cares for you. So we'll pray and call ourselves giving it to God, and then turn right around, pick it up, and try to do it ourselves. And then when we mess it all up, then here we go crying again, oh God, help me.
Oh yeah. I can't tell you how many times, Joseph, I've prayed and asked God to bless this mess that I've made.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've prayed and laying all my bills out on the table. Like He doesn't know where they are, and I'm going, now we need to look at this together. Because obviously, I'm trusting You, but this is telling me I'm on the wrong track here. B, a leader cannot take his followers somewhere he has never been himself. If any of you have ever tried to teach a leader discipleship group, there is this ache that comes inside that you're getting ready to teach them something that you're not living out yourself. Now, any of you teachers in here ever done that? Are you a teacher? I don't see your name.
Would you
let
me beg it out for you?
No, what is it?
Stacy.
Stacy? Have you ever taught?
It's my career.
Okay, it's your career. I couldn't have chosen a better person. You can identify with what I'm saying, then, that there are things that we've taught other people to believe that we weren't truly convinced of ourselves. We've taught people to trust God where we weren't truly trusting God ourselves. Now, does that make us hypocrites?
Makes you a learner.
Makes me a learner? You sure it doesn't make me a liar? What do you think, Stace?
So, I travel internationally. This is an aspiration to teach a Bible study class formally. But I do talent and leadership development and coaching and mentoring on an international level. Mm-hmm. And I get sent to places all over the world. I have 250 offices that I travel to. And nobody can do what the Lord does through me because of what exactly it is that you're saying. Because I can go in with, this is what you should do, and you should read a book, and this, and this. But until you share, you're vulnerable, and you've been there and done that with them. And that, to me, this past year has opened my eyes to how God uses our gifts and whatnot, and how that God's love and His wisdom transcends cultures.
Absolutely.
And cultural barriers, and the people, Muslims that I work with, and the glory is to Him.
Okay.
But
great testimony. Yeah. Now, what I hear Stacy saying is simply this, that the truth is the truth, even if it's coming out of the mouth of a liar. Some of y'all think about that for just a second. The truth is the truth, even if it's coming out of the mouth of a liar. So what is more important, that you allow, you think, to fool your people in believing that you're somewhere you're not, or to allow them to know that you're still in the process of becoming and trusting and risking and taking on more responsibility? Because at that point of risk, your faith grows. That's where faith grows. You can do all the Bible studies you want. You can do all the prayer life you want. You can go through as many as you want to. But your faith will not grow without risk. Make sense?
I guess it would be like Peter told Jesus, it's You bid me to come out of the boat, step out in the water. So we need to learn how to get out the boat sometime. But we got to stay focused on Christ.
I'd love to be in your Sunday school class, Justin. Thank you. That is powerful. Powerful. Max Dupree's book called Leadership Jazz, he says, whether leaders real or articulate a personal philosophy or not, their behavior surely expresses a personal set of values and beliefs. Leadership can never stop at words. Leaders must act, and they must do so only in the context of their beliefs. Your core values of every leader, every director of an LVS. First of all, it's integrity. That we are open and honest enough to say that we are in the process, that we've not arrived. But until you have some core beliefs that become solid, a core value that whether it comes to truth, whether it comes to who God is and His nature in our life, whether it comes to the fact that God is here, whether I feel Him or not, those begin to be expressed. Because the truth is that I put underneath integrity is that we don't lead in a world of reality. We lead in a world, as you well know, of perception that's there. But your work is one of changing their perception into reality. And that takes risk. Because I promise you, when it comes to building leaders, their perception of themselves is here. Your perception of them may be here. But your responsibility is to allow them to see themselves from God's perspective. Second one is servanthood. There are only five people that Jesus said would enter the kingdom of God. Only five people that He loved. Do you know who they are? Here they are. Least, last, lost, little, and doesn't rhyme, dead. We could put lifeless if you want to. That would really help some of you. Thank you. Thank you. How many of you can remember something Jesus said that had to do with one of these words?
These, my brethren, you have done unto me.
You got a King James Version girl right here. What else? What else?
Children.
Children. The least of these. You remember when Jesus said, I want to tell you why I love you so much? Because when I was hungry, when I was naked, when I was in prison, when I didn't have any, I was a stranger, that you saw me and you fed me and you gave me water and you took me out, you came and visited me in prison. And what did the people say? When did you do that? Well, I don't remember us doing that. When you did it unto the least of these, you did it unto me. And that's what this is talking about here, that servanthood. That's who you are. The oxymoron is the fact that you call yourself a leader, but you truly are the ultimate servant. Because you're serving these people and helping them become who God's created them to be. That's powerful. We put so much pressure on ourselves to lead, to be out in front, when in all reality, God's called us to serve. Jesus Himself said, I didn't come to be served, I came to serve. Three things He said He came to do: to seek and to save and to serve. That's all He said. The last thing is humility. And the only thing I want to talk about at a point of humility is the fact that the humble heart is a heart that has gone to battle with pride. You don't wake up humble. You fight your way tooth and nail to that place of humility. You fight all the way. You never give up. Because it just takes one negative word sometimes to plunge us down the hill You ever felt that before? You're on fire. I mean, and it's good. You're positive. You're knocking it out. People are right there with you, and the class is growing, and somebody comes along and says, you know what? I think you did that wrong. You shouldn't have done that. And all of a sudden, we'll listen to that person. And I mean, we'll just, all of a sudden, the spotlights hit us. And part of our heart starts stumbling and, you know, doubting ourselves. We become a little insecure. We go home and we complain and we fuss and we gripe. I mean, what an easy trick. Some of us are so easy. Let me tell you what. The work of Satan is one thing. The work of Satan in your life is one thing. And that's this. Now, in your members, every testimony they'll give you about what God's doing in their life is going to be about God's, the enemy distracting them away from what's real, what's true, what's good, what's of value. He didn't have to jump out from behind a bush. He just needs us to look away. That makes sense? Some of y'all have to think about that. D, we're getting close. Everyone is afraid of trusting God. In your Sunday school class, in your LBS, everybody in that room, like we talked about before, is afraid of trusting God in some area of their life. Now, if I can encourage you to do one thing, and our time is out right now, it's to simply remember what Henry Blackaby said, and I don't know if I wrote it in your notes there or not. I didn't. Henry Blackaby said, if God is telling you to do something that you can do, it's probably not God. If God is telling you to do something that you can already do, it's probably not God. Why?
It's in your own strength.
Absolutely, Chris. Why would He ask you to do something that didn't require faith, didn't require that risk, didn't require that trust that you have to have? As leaders, that's where we're taking our people. To bring them to this place to where they're right there. That our faith has got to increase. And how does it increase? Somebody tell me. I've already told you once before. Stacy, say risk.
Risk.
Risk. Stacy got it right. Does that make sense? The greatest role of a leader is helping our class understand the power and the potential of God inside of us. Not the teacher. It's you as a director. To help those folks that you are guiding, coaching, motivating to understand the power and the potential within them. I remember going to a Sunday school class several years back, and for that Sunday morning I went into our older, it's a senior group of men, and most of them were in their late 80s and a few right there in their 90s. And I sat in that class, and I will never forget that class because I just thought that these old men were going to be ruminating about the whens and the wheres and the stories of their life. And the teacher of that group was 92 years old, and he stood before these men, and he passed around a little envelope that had watermelon seeds in it. He said, I want you to take those watermelon seeds, every one of you get one, put it in the palm of your hand. And the 10 of us took those watermelon seeds and put them in the palm of our hand. And he said, what do you see? And I was the first one to speak because I was the smartest, of course, among all those old men. I said, I see a black watermelon seed, and I believe it's probably black diamond. The man looked at me, rolled his eyes, and started looking at the other men in the group. Little grasshopper talking. He said, I want to tell you what I see. I see the fact that this one watermelon seed has the ability to pull through itself 20,000 times its own weight. That this one seed has the ability to change the outside of itself from green to the middle of it, I mean to the outer, the next layer to white, and the inner layer to complete red. And then you know what I see? And all that red meat?
More seeds.
A And you know what I see in all those seeds? More watermelons. When I left that Sunday school class that morning, I had stupid written all over me. But I'm standing here tonight to simply let you know that that's what ministry is about. And that is to be able to help your folks in your Sunday school ministry look at that watermelon seed and think, what in the world? In me? That God could do something through me and in me? You got to make them question. Sometimes you're going to have to confuse them before you can convince them. Anybody get that? Until the mind comes to a crisis in its belief system, it won't change. It won't change. You guys are the best of the best. Y'all were even better than the first group. I won't see them again so I can talk about them. Thank y'all very, very much for allowing me to speak to you. Can I pray for you? Let me pray for you. I'll let you go. Father, I thank you so much for this privilege and for this honor of being able to stand before these leaders who trust you. And Father, are learning to trust you most, and their faith is growing. And Father, they are in the process of becoming. And Father, the conversion experience is taking place in their life. And Father, that they're learning to love you more and more and experience your love more and more and more. Father, that you would love those disciples that were unfinished and undone with so much unresolved. Father, we could move from here and realize that our greatest impact is when we identify with their pain more than lead them, but to connect. I thank you for this joy. In your name I pray. Amen. Amen. God bless you guys. Thank you, Lucy.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for what you do.
Man, what a mission. What a mission.
They're building a platform for you.
Thank you. Hey, Bob. It's okay to see you.
You know, letting in Jane Skinner.
I know. Jane Skinner that was here?
No. It's Ronnie and Jane Skinner. It's my aunt. I told her you were coming in. She said, you better go over and tell her how.
Well, you know, sometimes when I have about four Janes in my life. When you said Ronnie, then I connect them together. They're good people.
Oh, man, yeah. Love them to death. I used to go out there and spend 2 weeks every Sunday.
Man, I've spent some time with them in Colorado.
Yeah, she told me that you went up there with him a time.
He still drives a bus for us.
Does he?
Picking up people in the far parking lot.
Yeah.
Or he did.
Well, they're in White House. We're down here. My dad's in Florida. So I generally hear them from my dad. But you know, I know Ronnie's got some health issues.
So, I'm telling you, Aunt Jane can cook too.
Oh, yeah, trust me.
Holy
cow. Listen, we're some big people in our family, so. We like to eat.
I'll tell you, said hello.
Would you? I appreciate it.
A little bit.
I really enjoyed it.
JJ,
we want you to tell Ray and tell Carolyn Ketchy hello. We're from the refiners class, is the name of our class. You probably won't remember that, but she'll remember JJ's easy. That's an easy name. Everybody knows that.
Thank you.
So I'm going to tell you something really quick. My daughter went on a mission trip. She's a school teacher here. 9 years talking to me. She was called to John Pasadena. Every summer she went on trips when she wasn't teaching. She went to Brazil 23 years ago. She's in attend to see Baptist missionary joined up with Brazilian girls. They've got four churches. They've been there 23 years.
Oh, wow. Where?
The biggest church seats about 300, so we're not talking about strip center churches. She came home 3 years ago with cancer of the thyroid. She went to MD Anderson. They removed the thyroid. We waited a week and went back. No cancer cells in the thyroid. And everyone's done a positive. So we've had to be careful with our one quick more. I was diagnosed with ALS, acute allergies, and I went to the guy that gets all the research money in the United States. Right here in Washington, D.C. has a whole board of medical care, all he works for a while. All he works on is ALS. I went to his clinic, went to the home in the backyard, I had ALS. 1 year later, he told me he wasn't that way. And we asked him if it was the wrong diagnosis. He said, no. He said, you had it. I said, I'm the only one in the clinic that wasn't dying. And you know what? I asked him if he'd ever told that to anybody.
You know, it's really
janitor.
It's not hard for us to trust
him. I've had a miracle.
Are you just visiting? It's not hard.
Yeah, right.
God's still in the healing business.
You bet.
And it really makes you believe. We have a grandmother.
He can.
He can. We're not trusting.
Love you, guys. Thank you.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Ray. Hello. We love him a lot.
Thank you.
I'm Linda. They said that I got to go into the pier.
Thank you very much. Excellent class.
Yes, you will.